the absolute truth, the greatest of all, and a feature of the Supreme Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the greatest of everything is Sri Krishna. Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaishcha Vedya, by all the Vedas I am to be known. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1:11, it is said that the absolute truth is understood three phases, namely Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdhyati. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the last word in understanding the absolute truth, Brahman. So I'll be sharing some small PowerPoint here. Om Jnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumlitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namahum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi कृपा सिंधुभ्य पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्णा सो आई एम ग्रेटफुल टू बी हियर विद ऑल ऑफ यू टुडे थैंक यू फॉर दिस अपॉर्चुनिटी टू स्पीक अबाउट चैतन्य चरितामृत सो क्लोज टू गौर पूर्णिमा एंड हियर वी आर डिस्कसिंग व्हाट वी कुड कॉल इज द डिस्टिंक्टिव कोर ऑफ द मैसेज ऑफ लॉर्ड चैतन्य that how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the highest conception of divinity. So I'll talk about this today in three parts. We'll discuss mainly first the how the absolute truth is multifaceted. Then I'll talk about where Advaitavad, the idea of oneness, goes wrong. And then a major part of the class will focus on if people have Advaitic conceptions, how do we deal with them in a way that is both philosophically faithful and personally emotionally sensitive. So now the multifacetedness of the absolute truth. It's important to understand that the personal and impersonal, this has been a controversy that has been going on for thousands of years. And Niels Bohr is a famous physicist, and he made a statement which applies quite precisely in a way to this controversy. That in normal parlance, when we say that statement A is true, its opposite will be false. But the opposite of a correct statement is a false statement. That's in a normal sense. But the opposite of a profound truth may well be another profound truth. So the idea that the ultimate absolute, ultimate reality is a person, is personal. That is one profound truth. And that ultimate reality is impersonal. But that is also a profound truth. Why? Because to appreciate the greatness, the pervasiveness of the ultimate reality, it is reasonable to posit that ultimate reality cannot be personal. Wouldn't that limit it? So when we approach this controversy, what we need is humility. Humility means that not just that my understanding is right and your understanding is wrong, but that our understandings lie at various spectrum, various positions on a spectrum of rightness and wrongness. So when we talk about the ultimate reality in devotional terms, the ultimate reality is both personal and impersonal. And that is a critical understanding. So if you consider the conceptions of the absolute truth, if we say that the absolute truth is only personal, then for many people, this seems limiting. Why limiting? Because they think of personality in terms of material personality. And they think, say, if I'm a person, you are a person, I have a form, you have a form. And then our form limits us to one place. If I'm right now here, I cannot be in London. If you are in London, you cannot be in India. So we are limited. So for what people think when they are generally on the spiritual path, that if there is a personal, if somebody is a person, they will be limited by that personality. By being personal, they'll be limited. They will be localized to one place. And their idea is if the ultimate reality is to be all pervading, is not, they should be, ultimate reality should be free.
Prabhu, your video is frozen. We can't hear you. So it looks like we've just lost Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. Sure, he will come back in some time. Probably internet connection is not so good over there. And we just put on the video show for now of the verse we have today and ask the devotees to be patient. And sure, he will be back in little time. Thank you very much for your patience. Hare Krishna, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, can you hear us?
Yes, sorry, somehow my net went off.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem. So please go on.
So now, I was mentioning how if we call some company and when we call that company, at that time, they have some robot or some kind of robotic assistant speaking to us. And he says, this is so impersonal. So generally when something is impersonal, we see that as something lacking. If somebody talks, somebody whom we care for and with whom we had a very good relationship, if they start talking with us in a very, very official, formal kind of way, we say, what's wrong with you? We know each other so well. Why are you being so impersonal? So impersonal is also lacking. And of course, form is one of the most attractive things in the world. And impersonal reality lacks form. So the problem of limitation is not removed by simply being by having something as impersonal. So what the scriptures explain is that the ultimate reality is neither simply personal nor impersonal. It's transpersonal. That means free from the limits and lacks that characterize reality, that characterize our experience of reality. So What that means is that reality is existing at another level, at another dimension. And when we understand this aspect of that reality, then we can actually appreciate the absolute truth is transpersonal. So it's a transcendental personality. Krishna is a person, but when as a person he manifests, he can be at one place, he can be on the chariot of Arjuna, but at the same time he can contain the whole universe within him. He can be in the lap of Mother Yashoda, but he can show the whole universe within him. So Krishna is not just personal, he's transpersonal. Now, what does this mean from a practical perspective? So let's to understand this. Okay. Yeah. So here, one way to understand this is that if we consider the ultimate reality, it is Sat Chit Ananda, it is described to be. So now we could compare this with an attractive cake. Now, if a cake is being made somewhere, say it's being made in the room next to us, then the cake has fragrance, it has shape, and it has taste. So the fragrance of the cake is probably what we will, if we are some distance from it, we might get the fragrance of the cake. And then as we go closer, we see, hey, this cake looks so attractive that we see the shape. And if we go closer, we experience the taste of the cake. And the fullest experience of the cake comes when we experience the taste. So the same applies to the ultimate reality also. So just as a cake, when it is perceived from far, first we see the fragrance, then we go closer, we see the shape, and then we come closer, at that time we experience the taste. By the time, it's not just the taste we are experiencing, we are also experiencing the fragrance and the shape, we are actually experiencing the fullness of the cake. So similarly, when we are perceiving the ultimate reality, when we perceive that reality from a distance, what we see is, it's eternal. Beyond all the changes that characterize material existence, there is something which is unchanging, something which exists forever, something which is eternal. So that is the Sat aspect. Now, when we perceive the Sat aspect, that means we are perceiving the Brahman aspect of the absolute truth. Now, when I say perceiving the Brahman aspect, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are the same. There's one absolute truth, different names. So Brahman itself is Satchitananda also. It's not that Brahman is only Sat. Because Brahman is not different, non-different from Krishna. But the point over here is that when somebody perceives Brahman, they are perceiving the eternal aspect of the absolute truth. Just like the cake is the same in all situations. The cake has shape and taste even when we are only perceiving the fragrance. But at that time, from the distance where we are at, maybe the cake is in the neighboring room and we are in this room, and all that we perceive at that time is the fragrance. So Brahman is not a different reality from Krishna, but it's one aspect of the reality that is perceived. And if, suppose we could say that when you perceive the cake only as a fragrance, we have a different name for it. When you perceive its shape, we have a different name for it. And you perceive its taste also, there's a different name. So that way, the ultimate reality, when it's only its Sat aspect is perceived, that is Brahman. When we go closer, then we perceive the Sat and the Chit aspect. We understand that the ultimate reality is not just eternal existence, but it's also conscious existence. There's the eternal reality being conscious perceives us. And then it responds to us. It responds to our actions by giving us the consequences of our actions. That's Paramatma aspect. And then when we come more closest to that ultimate reality, we perceive that ultimate reality through a personal relationship. And that is the time when we perceive the ultimate reality in all three aspects. It's not just eternal, not just conscious, but also it is blissful. The Ananda aspect comes up. And then bliss comes through a personal relationship where there is loving reciprocation. And that is the Bhagavan aspect. So it's the same reality perceived at different levels. So that's why we started by saying that to say that the ultimate reality is impersonal is not wrong. Because the impersonal aspect is also there, the Brahman aspect. And the personal aspect also is there. That is the Paramatma aspect. So both aspects are present within the absolute truth. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagwan. So this was the first point I discussed, that the multifacetedness of the absolute truth. It's three-level manifestation. Now we'll talk about Advaitavad, which is something which the Chaitanya Charitamrita strongly critiques. And it says that those who interpret, those who give interpretations to the absolute truth in terms of, say, if they interpret the Vedanta Sutra in a particular way, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking to Sarvam Bhattacharya, and he's concerned that the interpretation that you are giving are actually obscuring the original meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. So let's look at Advaitavad and where it goes wrong. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the ultimate reality at multiple levels. And he says that in the 9th chapter, he talks about, we could say, have a spectrum. So those who see him as the ultimate reality are satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dudavratah namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. They always worship Krishna as the ultimate reality. That is 9, 13, 14. So we can see their conception is closest to the ultimate reality. Then there are those who conceive of Krishna, conceive of the ultimate reality in different terms. Ekatvena pruthaktvena bahudha vishvato mukham. They see the absolute truth as a oneness. They see it as manifested as many, as the worship of the devatas. And they see it in various ways. They may see it as a Vishwarupa, as God distributed throughout the universe. These are various manifestations. But the conception that is the furthest from Krishna, Krishna says that they are mudhas. Those who see Krishna, the personal manifestation, as a convenient fiction to reach the ultimate reality. Now, what do we mean by convenient fiction? We'll explain that. But such people, what do they do? Avajananti ma mudha. They think that Krishna says that they are foolish, they are deluded. Moghasha mohakarmano moghyana avajetasna. They are completely deluded in their understanding. They think that Krishna's form is a temporarily assumed tool. So what do they think here? Let's try to understand this. There are personalists and impersonalists. So now it is, no one denies that God has a personal manifestation, God has an impersonal manifestation. So what happens is, the personalists say that from the personal comes the impersonal. That this is the effulgence is the Brahma Jyoti that is shown here. So from the personal comes the impersonal. And that is the Vedic teaching. Brahmano hi patishtaham. That Brahman rests in me, Krishna says in 1427 in the Bhagavad Gita and many other places. So he says, aham sarvasya prabho mattaha parataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. Many places Krishna says that there is no truth superior to me. He is the source of everything. So the personalists understand that God has an impersonal aspect, but the personal is the foundation and the impersonal is the manifestation from that foundation. Whereas impersonalists hold that the impersonal is the source of the personal. That from the impersonal, the personal has come. So the Brahman is the ultimate reality and the personal has manifested from the impersonal. So this is the idea of the impersonalist. And that, Krishna says in 724, is avyaktam vyaktimapannam manyante mam abuddhayaha. This is an unintelligent conception to think that I was unmanifested before and I became manifested now. So this is the fundamental difference. So it's not that the personalists deny the impersonal aspect, and it's not that the impersonalists also deny the personal aspect. But it is which comes from which, that is the general source of debate. Now, within impersonalists, there are two categories. There are Brahmavadis and there are Mayavadis. So what happens to the Brahmavadis? The Brahmavadis accept that there may be a personal manifestation, but I am attracted to the impersonal manifestation. I want to attain the Brahman. I want to merge into the Brahman. And these, Krishna mentions in many places in the Bhagavad Gita. He talks about them in 9:15. Then he talks about them in 12th chapter. That te prapnuvanti mameva sarvabhuta hiterataha. So he talks about it in 12.4 in the Gita. So these are basically, yes, there is an impersonal aspect, there is a personal aspect. We are attracted to the impersonal aspect and we will attain the impersonal. So that's what their purpose is. Whereas the Mayavadis, they say something else. The Mayavadi conception is, Krishna described in 9.11.12, as well as in before that in 7.24 in the Gita. So what does he say over there? That so such people, if you see, they say that Krishna is an illusion. And we need to go beyond the form of Krishna to the Brahman. And so they consider Krishna's form to be a convenient fiction. Now, what do we mean by a convenient fiction? Convenient fiction means they consider that actually Krishna himself is just a temporary form that people have thought of so that they can reach the ultimate reality. Because the ultimate reality is impersonal, and because ordinary people can't perceive the ultimate reality, therefore, some form they can imagine. Now, some of them say that, okay, the Brahman may also take a temporary form. But the idea is the Brahman may have taken certain forms. And we can also choose a form that we like, which is the Ishtadev. Whichever form we like, we worship that. And the perfection of your worship is that you go beyond the form to the impersonal. So, for example, sometimes they may also engage in deity worship. But their idea is that suppose you sit in front of a deity in meditation. The perfection of your meditation is that by the power of your meditation, the deity will crumble into powder. And once the deity crumbles into powder, then you have gone beyond the form to the formless. And of course, now very few people can actually cause any form to crumble into powder by their mystical power. So what they do is they claim to be in some people, not everyone. Now again, Mayavadis, we'll discuss a little bit more about Mayavadi in the subsequent section. But some people, they claim to be in solitary meditation, and when they are meditation, this form doesn't crumble. So they take a hammer and smash the form. And they say, I have attained perfection. I've gone beyond the form. Now, a few people might do it physically, but conceptually, their idea is go beyond the form to the formless. And that's why the Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very concerned. The Vaishnavas get sometimes not just concerned but incensed. How can you consider the form of Krishna to be an illusion, a fiction to be transcended? And those who are worshipping Krishna, they consider they are still an illusion. They have to rise higher. So this is why Mayavad is considered objectionable, offensive. Now, having said this, let's look at how we deal with Mayavadis. If people have Advaitic conceptions can refer to both. And there is, the ultimate reality is Advaita. There's non-different. There's only one ultimate reality. So when people have this kind of concept, when people say, oh, I want to merge into the absolute, the ultimate reality is a light in which we are to merge. So we might be quick to label such people as Mayavadis. So but let's look at this. How to deal with people who have Advaitic conceptions. So there are people who have, let's look at this. So first thing to understand is that people are multidimensional. Multidimensional means that people have a social, and people come to a spiritual path also. Now quite often they come to a spiritual organization not because of what philosophy that organization is teaching. They may come to that path because they just want to, they want a social aspect to their lives. And they feel, okay, when I go to this organization, when I go to this group, there's some good people over there. I have people who share many of my interests. So one of the main reasons why people take to a spiritual path is because they want a sense of community and belonging. So the point I'm making over here is that some people might be associated with an Advaitic organization, or they may be associated with the Advaitic path. But we shouldn't be too hasty to label them as Mayavadis. Because the question is, why are they going to that path? They may not be going there because of their philosophy. They may be going because I want a sense of community and belonging, and they're nice people over there. Or sometimes they may go there for cultural reasons. No, the cultural reasons means, okay, you know, I can have my kids learn some shlokas, learn something of our spiritual culture. We have a place where we can go and do some worship. We have a place where you know, we can have various weddings and other religious rites be performed or sanctified. So people may be going to a particular part because of the cultural aspects. Or sometimes when people are attracted to spiritual leaders or to spiritual organizations, that may be because they have some humanitarian instincts, they have some philanthropic or charitable instincts, and they see, oh, this organization is doing so much charity. So they have such a super specialty hospital where they offer free treatment. Oh, they have so many good things over here. So people may go there because of the humanitarian aspect. And a few people may go there because of the philosophical aspect. So the point is that most people, they don't equate their spirituality with their philosophy. That means even if they come to a spiritual path, it is not primarily because of the philosophy. So we may consider them, they are Mayavadis, but they may not consider themselves to be Mayavadis. They may not even know what is Mayavad. They may not even know that the particular teacher whom they are following is actually a Mayavadi teacher. They may go to that teacher. So this is, first I'm talking about the multidimensionality of seekers. How seekers come from different perspectives. Why they join a particular organization. And when we look at the teacher also, now the teachers are also multidimensional people. And when people are attracted to that teacher may have taught Mayavad in particular passages or particular sections. But maybe that teacher is a charismatic teacher, and they're attracted to the personality. Maybe that teacher is doing a lot of philanthropic work, and that's what they're attracted to. Maybe that teacher gives some ethical wisdom, and they like it. So when people are attracted to a teacher, the teacher might be teaching Mayavad. But that Mayavad might not be what is attracting people to that teacher. So that's why if we are too hasty in labeling somebody as a Mayavad and condemning them for that, then we are being judgmental, we are being short-sighted. Let's understand this from another perspective. So see, we sometimes reduce people to philosophical categories. Oh, this person is a materialist, this person is an atheist, this person is a Mayavadi. But people are multidimensional. They are conscious beings and they have many aspects to their personality. So we need to see people holistically. See people holistically, that people are not philosophical categories. People are conscious beings. And their philosophy is one side of who they are. And reducing people to their philosophical conceptions or reducing people to philosophical categories is actually knowledge in ignorance, knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Krishna says in 1822, Yattukutsnavade kasmin karye saktamahedukam atattvarthavad alpamcha tattamasamadharitam. So what does this mean? Knowledge in the mode of ignorance? It can call it as ignorant knowledge. Why is it ignorant knowledge? We have knowledge, but knowledge of only one aspect of reality, while we neglect the totality of reality. So Yattukutsnavad ekasmin, that means we take one thing to be everything. Atattva arthavad, it is oblivious of the ultimate reality, it is oblivious of totality of reality. Then albamcha, it is only a fragment. And what happens is we think we know a lot when we know a lot about a little. We know a lot about a little. So what this means is that when we reduce people, oh, this person is a Mayavadi, actually we may be exhibiting knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Why? Because those people whom we are calling as Mayavadis, they may have multiple aspects to their personality. And why are they going to a particular spiritual path? That may vary from person to person. They may going to be a spiritual path, but what we are doing is, we are considering their philosophy, their philosophical conceptions far more important than what they consider their philosophical conceptions. Because most people, as I said, they don't go to a spiritual path only because they're attracted to the philosophy. So sometimes when we reduce people down to their philosophical conceptions, then it becomes a problem. When Srila Prabhupada went to America first, he stayed with Dr. Mishra at the Mishra Yoga Studio. And this Mishra was a yoga teacher, but he also had Advaitic conceptions. And he didn't let Prabhupada speak. And because Prabhupada would critique his philosophy, and he would only let Prabhupada do kirtans. And eventually Prabhupada, as soon as he found another place, he shifted away from there. So now, later on, many years later, when Prabhupada was, this Dr. Mishra came to meet Prabhupada again. And His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj was there at that time. And then Prabhupada and Dr. Mishra, they had a very cordial talk with each other. And after that, Giriraj Maharaj asked Prabhupada, isn't he a Mayavadi? And Prabhupada said, yes, just philosophically we argue like anything, but culturally we are friends. So philosophically we argue like anything, but culturally we are friends. So Prabhupada saw that there is some cultural, at the cultural level there can be similarities. So Prabhupada did not reduce him down to a Mayavadi alone. Yes, that was the philosophical aspect, but Prabhupada, he had multiple different aspects, and culturally we are friends. So when we put the Mayavadi label on someone, we have to really check, is that really applicable to them? They may be following a Mayavadi leader without even knowing that leader is Mayavadi. Knowing that that the leader is Mayavadi. So now what happens is, so we give the philosophy of that leader much more importance than what they give it. So they may follow the Mayavadi leader without giving much importance to the philosophy of that leader. They may be attracted to something else about that particular leader. That means they may give importance to. So they may give more importance to, say, the humanitarian work that person is doing, or the cultural work that is doing. So many people whom we call as Mayavadi teachers, Mayavadi leaders, maybe because of them, because of being connected with that, their followers are not being materialistic. Maybe their followers have still some respect for cows, respect for Vedas, respect for some kind of deity worship, respect for some broad aspects of Vedic wisdom or Vedic philosophy, Vedic culture. So for them, the philosophy may not be important. So now, will they be Mayavadis? Sometimes these people, when we call them as Mayavadis, they may be attracted simply to the, they are attracted to the philanthropic work of the leader. So what happens is, when they are attracted to the philanthropic work of the organization, then that is, we are overemphasizing their Mayavad. Or they may be attracted because they just experienced some peace amidst worldly anxiety. And I'll focus on this point before I conclude and we open the floor for questions. That most people go to a spiritual path because they get some experience. And what experience they are getting is important to understand. Imagine if somebody is... Imagine if somebody is out in the cold and they have a thin, torn sheet around them. Now that sheet offers very little protection from cold. But that is the only protection they have. And then we go to them and we want to give them a nice, thick comforter. But we tell them, when we go to them, we start, hey, that sheet is so useless. It's so torn. It's so thin. What is the use of it? Just throw it away. And then if they're a little reluctant to throw it away, we start pulling it from them. And as we pull it, they resist. Because that is what is giving them relief. That is what is giving them protection. And then they may fight with us, even risking their life. They may fight. And we say, I want to give you a comfort. Why are you so foolish? But for them, that sheet is the only protection from cold. So instead of trying to pull away their sheet, just put the comforter around them. Just put the comforter around them. And they start experiencing, hey, this is so warm. This is so soft. This is so cozy. I'm feeling so good over here. Then they think, what do I really need? That sheet, they themselves throw away the sheet. So what am I referring to here in the sheet? The sheet refers to whatever spiritual experience people may have. Now, it may not even be a spiritual experience, but they think it is a spiritual experience. As compared to, say, the modes of passion and ignorance in which most mainstream society lives, even if people go to some scenic place near nature, they feel peaceful. They may go and do some laughter therapy. Is laugh and laugh and laugh. Now, we may laugh at their laughing, but actually while they're laughing, they may get some relief. They might just go and do some kind of meditation. So listen to the sound of silence. We may focus on the logical absurdity. How can you listen to the sound of silence? But actually that, trying to focus on just focus on some sound. They might experience some calmness. So whatever be the specifics of their philosophical conception or spiritual conception, the important thing is, as compared to the modes of passion or ignorance, they are experiencing some relief. That relief may just be goodness. It may not even be transcendence. But when they have experienced that relief, which they consider to be spiritual, and then we discount it, hey, this is silly. This is stupid. This is anti-scriptural. This is Mayavadi. This is sentimental. This is Sahajiyaik. Whatever label we give to it. And what happens is, it's like we are trying to pull off the sheet that is giving them comfort, that is giving them some protection from cold. So instead of critiquing their spiritual experience or their particular path, what we can do is just give them an experience of Krishna. Give them an experience of Krishna. Put the comforter around them. Now, how do we give them an experience of Krishna? It might be simply by the cultured, courteous way with which you talk with them. It might be by inviting them to come to a spiritual program, come to see the deities, participate in the kirtan. Whatever it is, give them an experience of Krishna. And once they experience how rich the bhakti experiences are, that's like they get the comforter. Hey, why do I need this sheet? So, even when somebody is a Mayavadi, we don't have to discount their spirituality. We don't have to reduce them to their philosophical label. Rather, try to raise them upwards. Now, of course, there are some people who are outright Mayavadis in terms of they're aggressively condemning Krishna Bhakti and they're aggressively saying that Krishna is an illusion. But in today's demographic, those people are extremely few. Those who are like hardcore Mayavadis out to preach Mayavad, they're very, very few. Most people, we can say, are under Mayavadi influence. And the way to get them out of their influence is by just giving them, by attracting them with a better experience. And that's why when you have to deal with people, what do we focus on? This is the concluding point. We focus on that part of their personality which is most receptive to bhakti wisdom. And not on that part of their personality which is most unreceptive to bhakti wisdom. So what does it mean? That they might be associated with some spiritual teacher or spiritual organization who might have some Mayavadi ideas with them. But if we highlight that, oh, you are a Mayavadi, that is going to make them unreceptive. So why focus on that? Oh, you have some spiritual interest. You have read some Bhagavad Gita. You have done some meditation. Oh, that's very good. You know, here we have systematic wisdom. Here we have not just meditation, but deep, enriching, devotional meditation. So, appreciate their spirituality and elevate their spirituality. Krishna says, "Na buddhi bhedam janayet agyanam karma sanginam joshayet sarva karmani vidvan yukta samacharan." Krishna says, don't disturb people's minds. Rather, where they are, engage them and raise them upward spiritually. When Srila Prabhupada was in India, we know that not many people became his followers at that time, but many people became followers in terms of initiated disciples. But many people became well-wishers and they supported the building of temples as life members. Now, most of these life members had their own spiritual paths and spiritual teachers. Some of the more well-to-do, wealthy life members were already also initiated disciples of some very prominent spiritual teachers in India. So when Prabhupada would go to meet them at their homes, they would have the big pictures of their impersonalist Mayavadi teachers. Now Prabhupada did not bother about that. Prabhupada did not critique them saying, why are you following this person? Why are you following that person? Prabhupada engaged them in devotional service. And they did remarkable service for Srila Prabhupada and for Krishna's mission. So that is the expertise of a devotee. He follows Srila Prabhupada's steps by being daksha, by being expert. knowing that ultimately everybody has the potential to be engaged in Krishna's service, and not placing labels on people which will block them from serving Krishna, but highlighting those aspects of their personality that can encourage them to serve Krishna. So when we have that understanding, we can be philosophically protective. We can be philosophically very precise and articulate in our personal philosophical convictions. At the same time, while giving people full opportunity to serve Krishna, we can be sensitive, we can be accommodating. And in that way, we can follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps and expand the Krishna consciousness movement. So I'll summarize. I spoke three main points today. First is, I talked about the multifacetedness of the Absolute Truth. How to say that the Absolute Truth, the idea that Absolute Truth is impersonal is wrong, is itself wrong. The different opposite of one absolute, one profound truth may well be another profound truth. So that the Absolute Truth is personal and impersonal, both are right. The actual Absolute Truth is, we can say, transpersonal. So we talk about Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagawan. It is like one Absolute Truth experienced at different degrees of proximity. Like a cake, first smelled, then seen, and then tasted. And the second point. So what's wrong with Mayavad? We discussed that. How the personalists and impersonalists both may accept that God has the opposite aspect also from their philosophy. The personalists understand that the impersonal rests on the personal, whereas the impersonalists hold that the personal comes from the impersonal. Where Mayavadis become offensive is they say that the personal is just a convenient fiction that we need to go beyond to attain the impersonal. And having said that, when dealing with people who have Advaitic conceptions, how do we deal with them? We appreciate their multidimensionality. We don't reduce people to philosophical categories, but see that, okay, this person is associated with some Advaitic group, but why are they associated? It might be for social reasons, cultural reasons, humanitarian, philanthropic reasons. So their philosophy may be far less important for them than what we consider it to be important. So rather than condemning them for their philosophy, if we reduce them to their philosophical conceptions, then we might be exhibiting knowledge in the mode of ignorance, taking one part of reality and making it the totality of reality. Instead, what can we do? We can see which aspect of their personality is most receptive to bhakti wisdom and engage them accordingly, as Srila Prabhupada did. His interaction with Dr. Mishra, when he said, philosophically we argue, but culturally we are friends. His interaction with life members, who we engage in Krishna's service. And rather than disturbing people's minds, we engage them so that they can become elevated. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Wow, Prabhu. Thank you so much for this very nice presentation. So scholarly presented and really understandable at the same time. I really appreciated the analogy of Krishna or the Absolute Truth with the cake. It's really... visualizing. We have some questions. One is about the Brahmavadi Mayavadi comparison. You said that Brahmavadis, they actually say there is a personal aspect and an impersonal aspect, but they are drawn to the impersonal, and that's why they focus on this impersonal aspect. What about if they don't say anything about personal aspect and they just say we only focus on the impersonal, we don't care if there is personal aspect? Is it still Brahmavadi or already towards Mayavadi?
Can you repeat one? What are the before that, who is a Brahmavadi or Mayavadi? What was the part you said?
The question is, if somebody is not speaking or conceiving or considering a personal aspect at all, but only focus on the impersonal, is it still considered a Brahmavadi or Mayavadi?
See, it depends. If we consider Shukadeva Goswami was considered to be an impersonalist, and then when he went to the abode of Vaikuntha, obviously he knew that there's something called Vaikuntha, and he somehow got there. Sorry, we're talking about the Kumaras over here, not Shukadeva Goswami, Kumaras. So when they went to Vaikuntha, and they were attracted to Kim Jal Ko Vishra Tulsi Makarandabayu, they're attracted to the Tulsi coming from the Lord's Lotus Feet. So that means they had some conception of the personal aspect of the Absolute. So the key thing, what differentiates Brahmavadis from Mayavadis is that they don't consider Krishna's form to be an illusion. So if they know only about the impersonal aspect and don't know about the personal aspect, but that seems to be the case of Shukadeva Goswami also. Because Shukadeva Goswami, he was already Brahman realized, and then he heard from this woodcutter beautiful descriptions of Krishna. He says, "What is this? Where did you learn it from?" He said, "Oh, I learned it from your father." "Oh, really?" Then he went back to Vyasadeva and heard from him. So it seems that they may have some knowledge of personal aspect, but they may have no knowledge of the personal aspect. But the key characteristic of the Brahmavadis is that they are not offensive to the personal aspect.
Okay, thank you very much, Ruchi. This makes sense. Now, another question was concerning the multidimensionality of people, which you very nicely explained. And the question is, also we ourselves obviously have these different layers and different reasons why we're in Krishna consciousness. And the question is, how can we detect or find out which one is more prominent or what we're actually drawn to? Because sometimes it seems that we're philosophically really interested, but if we go down to, we maybe just don't want to be alone or something like this in this direction. So how can we find this out in ourselves?
Yeah, that's a good point. See, all of us, we could say, going back to this same slide, I could change the slide slightly. And, okay. No, sorry, not this one. Can you see my slideshow?
Yes, Prabhu, we can see
it. Multidimensionality of people?
Yes, we can see it. Maybe just to add something little, it's also very much connected to this knowledge in Tamagun, right? Because then we perceive only fragment of this, our persona as well, and then we mix it up.
Yeah. I think what I'm saying that, see, some of us might be attracted to Krishna consciousness. Why we are attracted to say spirituality, you want it broadly speaking. So it could be that some of us may be attracted for the social aspect, some of us attracted for the cultural aspect, some of us for the philosophical aspect, some of us may be attracted for the, well, in bhakti we don't have so much humanitarian aspect, but there's a service aspect. I want to do some seva, I want to do something good for others. So there are some people who may come to a temple, they may never attend a class, but they like to serve prasadam. They like to do some seva. So that could be one aspect to it. So now, generally speaking, whichever aspect we are attracted to, that can be a pathway to Krishna also. And that's good if it's a pathway to Krishna. But when we are attracted to, when this aspect, say, the social, the cultural, the philosophical, that becomes our shelter, the challenge is, the danger rather is that, that may become the substitute to Krishna. That means, I come here simply for the cultural. I simply come here because people here are so nice. I like to be with these people. But then we are coming there not to take shelter of Krishna, but we are coming there to get simply the social aspect. Then what will happen is, if something goes wrong in the social aspect, that is, people don't treat us so well, we find that those people, these devotees, I thought they're so nice people, but I find that some of them are judgmental. Some of them are behaving in morally questionable ways. Some of them do this. Some of them seem to be insensitive, whatever it is. Then, or for whenever there is a disturbance in the social aspect, say, that will disturb us so much. Or, for example, cultural aspect. Somebody comes because they like to see how the aarti is going on, how the temple structure is. They feel peaceful. The cultural aspects are there. But if the cultural aspect is what is bringing us to Krishna, then if we see something different in the culture, hey, you know, Krishna is dressed in this way, he should be dressed in this way. You know, while doing that, we may go from one temple to another temple and we say, hey, the aarti is not being done right. So what will happen is, if the cultural aspect is what is important, any small change in the cultural aspect will think, what is the use of this? This is not spiritual. Sometimes people come to our temples and they say, oh, your deities are not facing in the right direction, the temple doesn't have a spire, and so many things they say like that. So for them, the cultural aspect is more important. So in general, on our spiritual path, we can see what is it that disturbs us the most. Because quite often, what attracts us the most is not so easy to know. But what disturbs us the most? So if something culturally slightly off agitates us the most, Or if some devotee's behavior, we have thought this devotee is a very senior devotee and we find something questionable about them. Or something philosophically, it just doesn't make sense to us. If philosophy is what has brought us to Krishna, in many ways I can say that philosophy was what attracted me to Krishna consciousness. And then, when I would ask some difficult questions, and to me those questions were obvious, you know, this question is obvious when you make this point. But sometimes the devotees would say that, why are you such a jnani kind of person? So when some questions I did not get answer, I would be disturbed not only because I didn't have the answers, but I would also be disturbed about why others are not disturbed. That, you know, this is an important philosophical point. Without a philosophical answer, how can you continue on? So in many ways, the philosophical side was my foundation. And somebody said, oh, this is not a very important question. Somebody would dodge the question. Then I could make out, you know, simply dodging the question. So that would disturb me a lot. So we can see from that perspective, what disturbs us a lot is what probably shelters us a lot. And then when the disturbance occurs, we have to choose. Am I here for the social aspect? Am I here for the cultural aspect? Am I here for the philosophical aspect? Then if I'm there for that, maybe I need to change why I'm here. So suppose some devotee we are very inspired by. They go through some issues and then they stop practicing bhakti or something changes in their lives. Think, why am I here? Well, I'm not here because of that devotee. I'm here because I ultimately want to attain Krishna. So we could say that in any of these four places, sometimes earthquakes can occur. Things can get shaken. And if our shelter is any one of these places, that quake will shake us too much. And when the quake shakes us, either we can go outward or we can go inward. You can think that, oh, devotees behave like this. They don't answer philosophical questions properly. They have no answers. I don't want to practice this path. And I can give it up. Or I can say that, yes, sometimes everybody has difficulties. Everybody comes from a path with various conditionings. Sometimes some people's conditionings may overpower them. But the fact is, by connecting with Krishna, we all can overpower our conditionings. So therefore, when the quake occurs, either we go toward Krishna or we go away from Krishna. That's how what disturbs us the most can reveal what is it that shelters us the most presently. Okay?
Thank you very much, Prabhu. This is a very nice answer. And I have a connected question to this, because with dealing with impersonalism, you also talked about this in another class, I don't know which one, that, you know, sometimes Mayavadis, they're more personal than we are, right? Even though they're philosophically more impersonal, they actually on a personal level more personal, or psychologically more personal. So now, if we are bothered so much by impersonalism, does it mean that we might be drawn to impersonalism in a sense? And how can we become more aware of that? And also, how can we change our psychological impersonalism more to personalism?
Sometimes people who follow an impersonal philosophy may be more personal than us. And sometimes we may be disturbed by, say, impersonal behavior among devotees or whatever. So what do we do about this? Now, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, especially if you look at Srila Prabhupada's memories, how many devotees were personally inspired to commit themselves to Prabhupada because of the way he smashed various philosophical conceptions? Very, very few. Most people were attracted because he was so personal, he was so caring, he was so loving. So, you know, we are persons, we are looking for personal relationships. And in fact, Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, Dadati Pratigrahanadi Purport, Guhyam Akhyadi Pruchati, there he says that the Krishna consciousness movement is nourished by these sixfold loving exchanges. It is nourished by these sixfold loving exchanges. He's not just saying that devotees should have these. He's saying the Krishna consciousness movement is nourished by these. This is the life of the Krishna consciousness movement. If as devotees, if we stop having those sixfold loving exchanges, then our movement itself will starve. So it will not be nourished, rather it will perish eventually. It may perish. So ultimately we are all, nobody, you can say at a personal level, has to practice bhakti. It's voluntary. And it's voluntary. What inspires us yes, we know philosophically this is the best path for me. But practically, what inspires us is largely the kind of experiences we have with devotees. So from one perspective, as a community, and especially as members or leaders of a community, we try to be as personal as possible with each other. That should be our, we should try to take that responsibility. That we try to be as personal as possible with each other. Because that's actually in consonance with our ultimate spiritual conceptions also. And it's also what we need to reach out to people. Now, having said that, we also need to recognize another aspect, that sometimes, despite our best efforts, it may be that we may experience impersonal dealings. Some of the devotees around us may behave with us in a hurtful way. So at that time, we need to understand what actually is happening. So rather than blaming, oh, devotees are like this, what is the use of all your philosophy, where is your spirituality? Rather than seeing it that way, we need to understand that all of us, when we are practicing spiritual life, you know, we have certain karma from the past lives, which we have to endure in this life. So we could say that by our destiny, we have to endure some karma. And there could be some quota of adhi bhautik karma. Karma that is going to come from the people around us. That has to come to us. And if we are in devotee association, that means if we are largely in devotee association, most of the people around us will be devotees. And therefore, our particular allotted adhi bhautik karma will come through devotees. So rather than simply blaming devotees, why are devotees like this? We need to see that this is simply my karma getting exhausted. So let me endure it. Now, of course, this is not a justification for impersonal behavior by any means. It's not a justification for insensitive behavior. But if that happens, we can see philosophically that way. So in general, in our scriptures, both sides are shown. If one side it is said that there are five categories of people who should be taken care of, and one of them is the elderly, that they should be well taken care of. But on the other side, it is said that once one becomes older, one should renounce one's home, go to the forest, and live austerely. And in the past name of Dhritarashtra, that attaining liberation, Prabhupada says that actually to die unknown in the forest, with nobody in the world knowing about it, you know, then that will be completely undistracted, only focused on the Lord, and one can attain a higher destination. So the point here is that, so should the elderly be taken care of, or should the elderly go alone to the forest? So it is from different perspectives that as a community, as a society, they should be taking care of the elderly. But the elderly shouldn't think that I'm entitled to and I want to demand this. The elderly should be focusing on their spirituality. So it's both ways. So as a community, we try to cultivate personal dealings with everyone. But if as an individual, if we face impersonal dealings, rather than blaming the community, we see this simply as an opportunity for us to exhaust our past karmic baggage, and thereby we can move forward in our journey toward Krishna. Okay?
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. This is really expert answering of the question. We have no more questions here, so I think we will end the class here. Thank you so much for associating with us.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Charitamrita ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai. Bhaktivedanta Manar Bhaktavrinda ki jai.